Welcome to the Wolverine Digest Podcast, the best spot for objective and authentic coverage of Michigan athletics. If you want open dialogue, honest opinions, and in-depth coverage of the maize and blue, this is the podcast for you. And now, here's your host, Brandon Brown, joined as always by Chris Breiler.
I just want to start by saying go blue.
Wednesday night, fellas and ladies. Wednesday night, back in action. We talked on Monday. We said, maybe we'll be back. We said, we'll see. We're going to look at our schedule. We're going to figure out what we need to do for our podcast routine. Obviously, during the season, it was Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Then we did post-game. Probably don't need to do that all off-season. But right now, dude, there's still a lot to talk about. Obviously, lots. The Jim Harbaugh saga, whatever you want to call it, rages on. And the new schedule came out today. And you also have a little kind of a 1 through 10 list that we're gonna talk about. That should be kind of fun. And yeah, so I mean, we decided we'd come on today. I mean, like, dude, until this Harbaugh thing is
did you say Harbaugh?
I don't know what I said.
Harbaugh?
You can we'll go back and listen.
We'll again. Review the tape on that one.
We'll check the tape. Until this Harbaugh thing is settled, like it's a big topic. You know, we're now here through Wednesday night. Still no announcement. And so, yeah, so we're going to continue to monitor it. We'll still keep talking about it until it's at rest, until there's a decision one way or the other. But, yeah, so we got that. We got the schedule. We got your list. Should be a good little show. It is a Wednesday night, so obviously anytime anybody out there wants to throw anything at us and talk
absolutely.
About it, and ask us, we'll do that. That's kind of like what every show has been since the season got over. Because we used to have like a, you know, we had like a regimented, we had segments and different things that we would cover each day of the week without a game to talk about from the previous week or to get ready for. All those segments kind of fell by the wayside. So we'll do whatever we need to do to get through 45 minutes to an hour show here. We'll start off with the Harbaugh stuff. Chris, thoughts today, Wednesday night, no announcement. Jim Harbaugh still under his contract from last year, which is 4 years left on it now. Again, the payment we've talked about, 11th highest paid Big Ten coach, 32nd or 33rd in the country. We're still waiting. We're still waiting. If you follow John Ubakin, he's what, on day 11 or 12 now, and we still know nothing? I don't know. That's where we're at, right?
Yeah, well, it depends. I guess it depends on who you follow and who you listen to, because I've heard everything from, you know, he's reached out to, you know, parents and players, and, you know, I've tried to confirm that, and I haven't received any feedback on that whatsoever. The last I heard, that wasn't the case. But again, I think, you know, the timeline seems to just add up to the, you know, taking a look at a good hard look at the NFL. And I think for every single day that goes by and you find yourself having the same conversation, at some point you've just kind of acknowledged what reality is. And I think it's pretty clear at this point that there's a couple organizations in the NFL that are still very much in play for Jim Harbaugh, regardless of what's being reported or what Jim Harbaugh said about needing to hit the recruiting trail in the coming days. He's still Michigan's head football coach, mm-hmm. and he's going to continue to act in that capacity until something changes. That's what you would expect from him. So I'm also not reading too much into the fact that he's still doing his job.
Yeah, I think that's a big deal. I mean, you mentioned it. Well, depending on where you look and depending on who you follow and what you read, it's like, well, he's making plans. He's doing this. He's doing that. So in other words, he's just doing his job. And here's the deal. I think it's Michigan or Raiders. I think that's what it is. I think it's he's back at Michigan or he's going to take the Raiders job. And I think that coming back to Michigan is the more likely outcome. And if Jim Harbaugh might also think that, then it behooves himself to continue to do his job, right? Like if he's not quite sure right now on a Wednesday night, but he knows there's a really good chance by this time next Wednesday, he's still Michigan's coach, then he has to do the things he's doing. He has to go to Schembechler Hall. He has to meet with his coaches. He has to set up recruiting.
But even if he wasn't going to do that, the idea that he would just kick up his feet and not do a damn thing until, I mean, that's just not going to happen. Like from a professional standpoint, you can't do that. So I'm glad that he's still doing everything he's supposed to be doing as Michigan's head coach, but I certainly wouldn't take, I wouldn't take that as a sign that he's definitely coming back. I think that take that as a sign that as of today, he is still the head football coach at the University of Michigan.
Yeah. And I do think that I would tend to lean towards him being back at Michigan because that requires the least amount of change. And that's what's already in place. And that really doesn't, nothing needs to happen for that to happen, I guess is the best way to put it. Like, even if, all right, here's what I know as of today. Okay. Here's what I know as
of Are you going there?
I'm going to go there. I talked to somebody today who talked to somebody. That sounds horrible. Whatever. I don't care. I talked to someone who talked to someone who got their hair done by this guy who said he clipped Jim Harbaugh's toenails one time. And last month, I talked to somebody today that I trust completely with very good information about some of the NFL stuff and about some of the Jim Harbaugh stuff and about some of the Ann Arbor stuff and all of that. All right. Jim Harbaugh, the Harbaughs, Harbaugh, his wife, his family, have been told that there's a very good chance that Rich Bisaccia is out as the Raiders head coach, unless he freaking basically takes the Raiders all the way to the Super Bowl. And I talked about this earlier in the week. He's done a really good job. The players like him. The other coaches get along with him. But he was not the guy hired by Mark Davis and the Raiders brass to be their head coach. And that's a big deal in the NFL. They like picking their guy. They like having a front man. They like having a mouthpiece. They like having someone that was their guy. They targeted. They went out and got him. That was John Gruden for them. John Gruden and Rich Bisaccia worked together back in the day with the Buccaneers when they won a Super Bowl. So they have a long-standing relationship. But Bisaccia's relationship with the Raiders is basically nothing until he got there with Gruden. So now Bisaccia comes in as John Gruden's special teams coordinator and assistant head coach. John Gruden gets shit canned. Bisaccia takes over. He does a really good job. The Raiders are in the playoffs. They play the Bengals at 4:30 on Saturday. They're projected to lose that game. They're 6.5-point underdogs. All right. So right now, Jim Harbaugh and his family have been told that Bisaccia is probably out unless he goes on a deep, deep run in the playoffs, and in which case it'd pretty much be impossible to get rid of the guy. I personally think if I was the Raiders, I would keep him. But that's not the feeling, that's not the vibe. So that means that the Raiders is potentially still on the table. This does not mean that Jim Harbaugh is option 1, 2, and 3 and automatically has an offer coming from the Raiders if they move on from Bisaccia. So that's why I say I feel like Michigan is still the most likely scenario, because there are a lot of moving parts with this thing. Even if the Raiders lose, or if they win, they still might go away from Bisaccia. Then they have to do some interviews. Then they have to determine that Harbaugh is the number one guy. Then they have to pitch an offer to Harbaugh, and he would have to accept. Because there are a lot of other things that are true as well. Jim Harbaugh and his family, his parents, they are happy in Ann Arbor. They're very happy in Ann Arbor. You know, they've got a lot of roots there. Everything about Ann Arbor is good for them. But Mrs. Sarah Harbaugh, has roots in Las Vegas and likes the idea of moving back out west and being in the NFL. That's a fact. That's a true statement. It was last year. It still is. I still think there's a lot of things that have to happen and fall in place for Jim Harbaugh to take a job with the Raiders. That's why I still tend to lean towards Michigan a little bit. But this thing with the NFL is freaking real. It's why it's now Wednesday night at 8:00 and he still hasn't done anything to confirm and concretely solidify his job at Michigan next year. That's all. That's the latest information that I believe to be true with this Jim Harbaugh situation.
Well, and it just goes back to the fact that until it comes from Jim Harbaugh or from the University of Michigan, any suggestion that this thing is over with, I would take it as a grain of salt, because you've seen those reports coming out consistently now for a week. I go back to I don't know how many days ago it was, but I saw a report where telling Michigan fans to rest easy, that this thing is locked up, the deal's done, Harbaugh's coming back, he's telling recruits, he's telling parents. All of this stuff keeps coming out, but you know what doesn't come out? A signed contract, announcement. And so until that happens, I get that people are excited, and sometimes people like to get caught up in the whole thing. I'm not caught up in it. To be honest, I'm still riding high off the 2021 season, beating Ohio State, winning a Big Ten title. I'm not ready to go down this emotional roller coaster of who the hell is going to be the next head coach, man. I'm still trying to party over here. I'm still trying to have a good time.
Yeah, we've talked about this before, too. I got to throw it up there. Where was it? Matt, dude, Vegas isn't just casinos, hookers, and blow, dude. There's a lot of wealthy people who live in and around Las Vegas. I've already mentioned it. I have no idea what the hell Harbaugh's kids would do if they went to Las Vegas to grow up for the next few years. But Bishop Gorman High School, right in the heart of Las Vegas, is literally one of the best high schools in the country from an academic and athletic standpoint. And, oh, by the way, it's a Catholic school. I think they'd be fine. Look, anybody out there who immediately takes anything like this that we're saying or that we're talking about or reports from Bruce Feldman or reports from Adam Schefter or wherever you get your information from and you immediately say, this is bullshit, this is all for clicks, we hear it every year, it's not happening. That's because you don't want it to happen. That's all that is. I'm still saying I think Michigan's the most likely outcome. I do. I think he's going to be back at Michigan because I just think there's a lot of other moving parts that would have to fall into place for him to take the Raiders job if it even becomes available. Like, there's a lot still there. He's already at Michigan. He's under contract. He's good. He's here. Nothing has to change. He just keeps it rolling. That's why I think that's the most likely outcome. But I think the Raiders deal is a very, very real thing. I really, truly do. And like you said, Chris, it's like, you know, read the tea leaves. Look where we're at. Look what's happening. And we're still here waiting. And I don't know how you couldn't look at that and think that something's kind of going on.
At a minimum, okay, best case scenario at this point, isn't the best case scenario that Jim Harbaugh and Michigan still aren't quite on the same page from a contractual standpoint? Like, isn't that the best case scenario? Mm-hmm. So either way, like, with a deal not being done, it must signal at the very least that Michigan and Jim Harbaugh aren't agreeing on terms as of now. And that, I think, is very telling. Either way, it goes back to a very, very simple concept that when two sides want a deal to get done, the deal gets done.
It gets done
pretty quick. And when a deal doesn't get done, that generally signals that somebody's taking a look around. And again, given the way the season went, given what happened with his contract and last offseason, you would expect all of this to be happening. And so I'm not surprised by any of it.
The Giants job is now open. The Bears is still
open. New York!
We know, but I still think it's Raiders. I still think it's Raiders or Michigan, and that's what it's going to be.
You think New York's out of the picture?
Yeah.
Big Apple?
There's just not. It just doesn't
cachet.
I know. Broadway. The cachet is there. The big city. I get that. But there just doesn't. It doesn't check the boxes like the Raiders do, or like the Raiders, Dolphins, and Bears all have like a strong connection to Jim Harbaugh specifically that would make that make sense. The Giants really doesn't, other than that it's just a premier job in the NFL. I mean, it's a mess. It's a mess right now, but it's still a premier job because of the Giants.
I.e. a Jim Harbaugh special.
Yeah. I mean, you know. Look, there's all the stuff out there about NIL, and there's all the stuff out there about the transfer portal, and like, that's all fine and good. It might be part of the discussion, but the bottom line is if Michigan wanted him back 100% and he wanted to be back 100%, it'd be done. And it hasn't been done yet. And, you know, the whole illegal, you know, the thing we kind of laughed at last year when I don't know what he was doing last year. I mean, it's pretty clear that he wasn't out there just coming up with the best negotiation of all time.
You're saying he didn't negotiate his way to a 50% pay cut?
Yeah. And it, like, we see coaches hired and fired within like an hour.
Yeah.
Like, literally within an hour. I mean, like, I think Lincoln Riley was like in US, you know, in US at USC, like picking out stuff for his office before he even,
you know what that is?
Or in Oklahoma.
That's an example of two sides that are motivated to get
it done.
That is why Lincoln Riley is currently enjoying sunny California right now, because both sides were motivated to get a deal done. So again, read the tea leaves.
Yeah. So there's that. I don't question that NIL needs some work. I don't disagree with the transfer portal being a little bit of a bummer the way it's currently set up, but you know, some of that's going to be out of certain people's hands. I don't think that really has a whole lot to do with Jim Harbaugh's contract to coach football at Michigan. I mean, we've heard about that. Again, referencing John Bacon, he thinks the NIL stuff was blown out of proportion a little bit. Whatever the case may be, no new deal yet. It's Wednesday night. We're now approaching the weekend. We are approaching that Saturday game between the Raiders and the Bengals, and I think that's a big deal. Now, I will say this. I've been told as of today that Bisaccia is probably out. regardless of what he does on Saturday, again, short of him like going to the Super Bowl or the AFC Championship or whatever. But that doesn't mean that at any time Jim Harbaugh could get wind of, well, no matter what happens with Bisaccia, Jim, you're just not going to be our guy. And if that message gets to him, then he's, all right, well, I'll sign. I truly think that's part of what it is, too. As of right now, he's not been eliminated from any NFL jobs, or specifically the Raiders job, so he's still waiting it out a little bit. Last year, I think it was today, I'm pretty sure. Remember, last year was the same situation. Well, same timeline, different situation, because he was coming off a really bad year. We thought he might be fired, or he might be let go, or he was trying to get out of town. He waited until Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday, somewhere like in that range after Black Monday, before he signed his new deal. And we're at that same timeline now, with the NFL ending, you know, the NFL regular season ending last Sunday. So we're just off the way.
I think you make a good point, and that's something that I think needs to be emphasize is that just because there's an NFL job that's open and available, it doesn't mean that organization, that Jim Harbaugh, is at the top of everybody's list. Yeah, he had a successful year at Michigan this year, one successful year, pretty successful year over the course of 7 years. He is certainly a hotter commodity this year than he was last year, but that doesn't mean that every NFL organization is running out to grab Jim Harbaugh. So there's a lot that's still going to have to work. Even if there is some smoke there, even if there is some mutual interest there, there's still a lot that has to happen for Jim Harbaugh to ultimately end up somewhere other than Ann Arbor next year. So I agree with you. I think right now the safe play is still Michigan, but I will also acknowledge that there is a very real possibility still, as of tonight, Wednesday, of a return to the NFL.
I forgot about that too. I talked to somebody else on the phone this morning, and they said that the fact that Jim Harbaugh's name is being brought up and talked about a lot in the media and in Michigan message boards and the circles around the U of M program, fans, is actually overblown. It's not, the interest isn't quite that high from the other side of things, from the NFL side of things. I think it's very real with the Raiders. And that's about it. That's why I stopped pretty much with them. I know the Bears kind of make sense. The Giants would be a big time job. The Dolphins obviously made some sense. Stephen Ross already came out and said that wasn't going to happen. But I really still think it's Raiders or Michigan. And that's it. And that's as far as it goes. So if it's not the Raiders, he'll be back at Michigan. And this is just something that you're going to have to continue to deal with, because it's pretty clear he still has some interest in the NFL and some unfinished business there. And we talked about this as maybe being one of the motivating factors as well. He's 58 years old. You know, when else is he going to have a high stock and some of these kinds of jobs open? Like, if you made a list of the top five NFL jobs that make sense for Jim Harbaugh to take, three of them are available right now. Dolphins, Bears, Raiders. Whether they're on the table for him still or not, those would be three of the five that you would list off. Maybe the
Colts, and the fact that the Giants are hanging out there is like not even an option. But it's like we talked about this last night. It's like the Lakers job being available or the Red Sox job being available. Like that's a big time premier head coaching job in the NFL. So yeah, I mean, I think you're right, man. Like you're probably looking at this year and what's available, and you're saying to yourself, if I don't make the leap this year, you know, you're betting on the fact that this, you can continue this level of success and keep your stock as high as it is now. And I think in today's college football, the things like the transfer portal and things like NIL are how you can ensure that. But if you don't have that and you're not able to utilize that to the full extent, maybe that's why you start to think like it might not be in my best interest to stay here.
I wanted to ask you it this way, Chris, ask this question. Because the NFL is ruthless. I mean, I think coaches get like 2 years. If it's not like drastically better in 2 years from where it was when they took over, they're gone. How long do you think, okay, if Jim Harbaugh comes back to Michigan, how many years does he have until any kind of rumblings start to kick up again? Let's say he goes another 4 or 5 years without beating Ohio State or winning a Big Ten. Is there going to be any rumbling of like, get his ass out of here? How many years do you think he earned himself with this season he just had in 2021?
Yeah, you're going to have it because I think there's still a segment of the fan base that feels that way now. For instance, if in 2022, Michigan, you know, goes 0-3 to Mel Tucker and the Michigan State Spartans, you're going to hear that conversation again. If they go into Columbus and they don't win that game, you're going to have that conversation again. I think I told you that earlier. I think I sent you that text earlier that you think about what the bar now at Michigan, especially after that schedule came out. I saw it all over social media. Michigan puts out the schedule and everybody's saying, okay, 11-0 going into that final week in November. Everybody's already putting Michigan at 11-0 going into the final week in November. There is no margin for error now at the level that people are holding this program to. So sure, if they go out and lose to Michigan State, if they lose to Penn State, if they drop one to Ohio State, there's absolutely going to be rumblings about whether or not Jim Harbaugh is the right guy for the job. And so I think at this point, I don't know that one good season has earned him enough buy-in to where that's completely gone.
Well, that's interesting, because if you feel that way, then if you feel that way, then that's less of a pull for him to come, like, automatically come back to Michigan. If you truly think like he didn't earn a bunch of leash back, or he didn't earn himself, like,
you can minimum see it.
Minimum there's 3-4 years.
There's people that think
no matter what.
There are people that think Michigan would be a national championship or champion right now had he not mismanaged the JJ Cade situation. I mean, I'm not subscribing to that. I'm not saying I believe that. But if you look out there, there are people that still believe that Jim Harbaugh was the reason why Michigan didn't go even further this year. And so I think, and I said this before, I think on the last show, this is a tough place for a guy like Jim Harbaugh to be head football coach, because the expectation has always been high. And now that he's actually gone out and done it, combined with what that schedule looks like next year, everybody's got this team, generally speaking, at 11-0. And if they're not sitting at 11-0 going into that final week, you're going to have a really unhappy fan base.
The reason why I asked it to you that way is because of what I said. The NFL is probably like a 2-year. Let's say the Raiders lose this weekend. They get rid of Bisaccia. They hire Jim Harbaugh. He's their head coach next year, the Raiders. If he doesn't, within like year two, at least get to where the Raiders are right now, like making the playoffs and having a first or maybe a second round exit, he's probably gone out of there. And I think that's got to factor in a little bit too. Like, depending on where you fall on how much grace he has now at Michigan, he's probably got 2 years at least before anybody gets pissed off about what's going on at Michigan.
Well,
and he just did. If he goes to the Raiders, like I said, it's cutthroat, man. They don't give you a lot of time to get it figured out there.
You know what? Here's what he has in the state of Michigan that he doesn't have anywhere else on planet Earth. He has got a group of people here that were willing to sign him to a lifetime contract on day one, and they have not wavered from that love and devotion to Jim Harbaugh.
You're talking about like before this season.
I'm talking at the end of 2020, he was still signed him to a lifetime contract. We're going the right way. They had that kind of faith in him. So, if you leave Michigan, you're not going to find that anywhere else. There is a group of people here that will fight tooth and nail for Jim Harbaugh till the cows come home. And that's a hard thing to walk away from, man. It's, you know, like you said, it's a cutthroat business at any level. And when you can find that kind of loyalty that also pays that well, it's a hard thing to walk away from. It's a gamble.
Yeah, no doubt about it. No doubt about it. But now that we're here through Wednesday, I mean, I fully expect this to go into the weekend now. I mean, if it doesn't, you know, and I saw some people saying like, well, he's got all these recruiting visits coming up. He's going out on the road next week. He's got kids coming to campus. This like
doing his job.
If he was leaving, there's no way he would be doing that. Well, he did it last year through signing day. Like, he was not under his new contract when the first signing day rolled around. And that was no big deal. He just powered right through it, signed a pretty decent class. Again, Black Monday came and went. Then he signed his contract a couple days later. So that point doesn't really carry a lot of weight either. You know, if you think that, oh, he's going out there and he's recruiting, he's doing this, he's doing that, clearly he's staying. Well, I don't know, man. I mean, it didn't force his hand into signing his contract last year. So he didn't have any problem with not being under contract last year and going into this recruiting cycle. And it looks like he's doing it again, and he's going to wait and see what happens this weekend. That's what I personally think. Again, I still say Michigan is the best, the highest odds.
There you go. CJ Frazier sums up that conversation pretty well. It is hard to leave a job that apparently you can never be fired from. I think so. He's got job security here in Michigan that he will not find anywhere else. And I mean,
that's for sure.
Wherever he goes, it's going to be a gamble. And you know, that's the trade-off. And I think the trade-off also is that, again, how much more is he going to accomplish at Michigan and how much more is left to accomplish in the NFL for him? I think that's something he probably, you know, struggles with internally. And that's why he's taking a big look.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Well, we've talked about the schedule a couple times already. And when you look at it, man, it's pretty easy. It's a pretty easy schedule. It's 8 home games, dude. 12 game schedule and 8 of them are at home. That's crazy.
Not too shabby.
They don't play a Power 5 opponent in the non-conference. I mean, it's 3-0 without them even having to open their eyes. I mean, Colorado State, Hawaii, UConn, that is going to be it might be 180-10 out of those 3 games.
That is the perfect 3 games to get JJ up and running and ready for that Big Ten schedule. I mean, 3 games against those opponents, he can put up some monster numbers. You get JJ going, you get Andrell going, you get the whole thing going, man.
And then you've got Maryland at home. That's, essentially a tune-up game in the Big Ten. It's like every year. It's like we talk about every year. Michigan's schedule is about 4 games long. It's 4 games. It's at Iowa on October 1st. It's at home against Penn State on October 15th. It's at home against Michigan State on October 29th. And it's at the Shoe, the last game of the season, on November 26th at Ohio State. That's it. It's those 4 games. You figure Michigan probably goes 2-2 or better in those, 10-2. That's your floor. 10-2 is your floor next year.
You had Iowa, Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan State, right?
Yeah, that's it. It's a 4-game schedule. That's it. The other 8 games, I mean, you can't lose them. You cannot lose any of those. The first 3, the non-conference, Colorado State, Hawaii, UConn, automatic. Maryland, at home, you can't lose that game. At Indiana, we'll see. Indiana was trash this year, and Michigan was way better. I would expect Michigan to be a big favorite in that one. At Rutgers, trash. Nebraska, they'll wax them in Ann Arbor. Illinois, terrible. It's a 4-game schedule, dude. That's it. It's 8 wins, you know, with your pants around your ankles, and it's you gotta go 50-50 in those tough ones. That gives you a floor, dude, of 10-2. A floor of 10-2.
And coming off
the season they just had.
And 10-2, I think people will be pissed off because you're thinking, look, what losses are going to be acceptable? Michigan State is not going to be acceptable. Ohio State's not going to be acceptable. I mean, you know what it's like going out to Kinnick, and I brought it up earlier, and I've seen people say it in the comments. That's most likely going to be a night game because that's how they do things out there. Yeah. So, you know, you're right. This is a 4-game schedule. I think the bar has, like I said, it's always high at Michigan. But now that they've done it, the expectation for next year, even with the losses they're going to suffer on the defensive side of the ball, the expectation for this program is very high.
Yeah, Brady, and by no means am I saying that Michigan or anybody involved with the team is scared of Iowa or Penn State, but realistically, there's 4 teams on that schedule who even have a shot to be competitive with Michigan if they show up, if they play well. It's those 4. At Iowa's tough. It's always hard to play at Kinnick. You can trash Michigan State all you want. Mel Tucker's 2-0 against the Wolverines. So if you're talking trash, you're just doing it out of blind fandom. They're not going to be afraid of Michigan, whether the game's in Ann Arbor or East Lansing. We've already seen that. So that game has to be paid attention to. And then Penn State's talented. I'm not a big James Franklin fan. I don't think the Nittany Lions are that great, but they've recruited just about as good as Michigan. So when you've got talent to deal with, you got to show up. And then, of course, Ohio State on the road. That's it, man. That's it. Now, if Michigan can be 11-0 heading in, like, it's kind of crazy, but that's realistic. It's, you know, going to Iowa is a different animal. Next year will certainly be a different team. Michigan's defense is going to be brand new, but they did just beat that team by 40 on a neutral field. I mean, I get it. I mean, I would pick Michigan to win that game handily, as we, you know, it's freaking January 12th right now. Spring ball hasn't even started. We don't know what the hell things are going to look like. They're looking at the transfer portal. You know, what freshmen are going to show up? Do we even know if JJ and Kate are both going to be on the roster come the fall? Like, there's a lot that still has to shake out. But I'm saying, looking at it on the surface right now, a very, very early prediction, it's a 4-game season and Michigan should be in good shape, probably favored in 3 of those 4. I mean, like, literally, they might only be the dog against Ohio State at Columbus. That's it. The whole season.
Again, man, like, I've said this so many times this year, But what a difference 1 year makes. Last year, we were talking, we were heading into the 2021 season, and you were laughing at me for 9-3. I mean, we were looking at 7 wins, like a team that maybe the bottom could come out and they could easily be 6-5. Like, right, correct, slurping this team. And now, now, like 11 wins is like a given. 10, 11 wins is like, all right, probably going to be back in Indy. It's going to come down to Michigan, Ohio State. And, you know, I just, it just shows how, like, there were a lot of people, a lot of fans within the Michigan fan base that had reserved themselves to the idea that Ohio State wasn't a big deal because Michigan just wasn't going to compete at that level anymore, and that it was an academic institution and it wasn't about beating Ohio State. And guys like you and I were pounding the table saying, you have to beat Ohio State. You've got to compete with the elite programs. Look at what happens when you get one breakthrough year. Even after 6 not so great years, everything changes with one breakthrough year. It was so important for this program moving forward for that to happen that now we're at a point where we think 10 or 11 wins is just the standard. That's a pretty cool place to be.
And listen to how we're talking about things. It's almost like we just kind of take what's happening and speak on it, right?
Right.
Is that weird? What a weird Correct. Concept, right?
Correct. I'm not going out of my way to look for ways to like want to get Jim Harbaugh out. Like somebody, I saw somebody in the comments, they were like, it's funny how like now, like first it was like everybody wants him gone and now you're cool if he returns. It's like, well, he got the job done. He did the job. And I hate that it took as long as it took. Nobody wanted it to take that long, but he did it. He's proven he can do it. And now I think he's earned the opportunity to go and try and do it again. That's so how this business works.
When you look at that schedule, Iowa is the second Big Ten game of the year. And again, it's January, dude. I mean, so many question marks will be filled in by the time this stuff actually happens. Like, what's your worry scale on a 1 to 10 about playing at Iowa for your second Big Ten game of the year?
That's like a level
even
8.
Even after winning 42-3.
A level 8, level 9, going to Kinnick. And if they
probably
if
at
they
night,
turn, if they yeah. turn the lights on, that's a buzzsaw. There is something that happens at that place. And you've got to think if things go the way we think it's going to go, Michigan's going to go into that game undefeated, probably ranked in the top 5.
Yep.
They're going to sell out to make that stadium as raucous as it can be. So yeah, my concern level going out to Iowa is almost as equal as my concern level going into Columbus.
Really?
Yeah. That environment, that team at night against big time opponents, that's where hopes and dreams go to die. We've seen it.
So I was just curious to see if Iowa will have had any kind of tune up to that point. And they play Iowa State, second game of the season. That's the Cy Hawk Trophy, you know, in-state rival. Yeah. But that's it. They play South Dakota State, Iowa State, Nevada, Rutgers, and then Michigan. So both teams will kind of be getting their first real test on October 1st. I mean, Iowa State, that can be a heated game, and it is a rivalry. It's Matt Campbell. It's a Big 12 team. I mean, they weren't very good this year, but that's something that they'll have to be ready for, and they'll have to be a little bit more tuned up than I would say Michigan would have to be through its first 4 games. It's a cakewalk for Michigan through its first 4.
Yeah.
But that's interesting that you said that. Well, I was going to ask you about all 4, so let's do that. You put Iowa at an 8 or a 9, Penn State at home. 2 weeks later, October 15th, Penn State at home, worry level 1 through 10.
I put that at 5 or 6. I mean, I think, you know, Penn State's always going to play them tough, but I like Michigan against Penn State at home. They typically do well in that scenario outside of 2020.
And then a week off. So right off the bye week, both Michigan and Michigan State have a bye before they play each other on October 29th. We're getting that Halloween weekend is turning into the Michigan State showdown, right? I mean, yeah. It's a couple days earlier this year, but 2-0, Mel Tucker, 2-0. What's your worry level in that one? Michigan State coming to Ann Arbor. That was one of the one of the big changes to where the schedule was before this new official one was released earlier today.
My worry level is a 4. with Michigan State. Look, and I think Michigan State has the attention of this football program. I think they're taking a look at what happened this year. And even though I'm sure they feel as though they got screwed in that game, you're taking a look at what happened this year and how one game could have possibly changed the outcome of the season. I mean, if Michigan wins that game, they're a number one seed going into the college football playoff. Likely you start to play out all these scenarios. Bottom line is Mel Tucker's 2-0 against Jim Harbaugh. And I think that these guys know that. And I think that they're going to show up to play. I don't know what you said. It's October 26th, right?
29th.
October 29th. They're going to show up to play that game. I think, you know, when it comes to this rivalry, it's always heated, but I think Michigan gets one done here.
I wanted to point this out real quick, going back to the Iowa game, because I think that is a good point. Where was it? Jonathan Smith. Not only is it a road game for Michigan, it's their first road game of the year. So you've got four cakers, you know, in Ann Arbor, three non-conference that'll be blowouts, a hosting of Maryland that should be lopsided, and then your very first road contest of the year is at Kinnick, probably at night. Yeah, that's freaky. That's freaky. Even after a 42-3 beatdown in the Big Ten championship game, it's a new year, a new team.
Especially after that, they're going to know about that. Yeah. They're going to remember that.
Yep, no doubt about it. And then last but certainly not least, obviously, man, at Ohio State, November 26th, regular season finale in Columbus. We'll be there. It's a 10, right? I mean, that's a 10 on the worry scale. Gotta be.
I would 8 or 9, like 10. I'm not completely freaking out, pulling whatever hair I have left out. I'm not at that level. I think the win over Ohio State in 2021 was a big deal for the psyche of this team. Mm-hmm. When a program goes so long without doing something, whether it's winning in a venue, beating another program, it gets harder and harder to do that with each year that passes. And so I think 2021 was a big step. I feel like this program legitimately believes they belong on the field and can compete with Ohio State. I don't know that they believed that over the course of the last 6, 7, 8, 9 years. I'm not sure that belief was fully in this program. I think it's changed now. I'm confident in the Wolverines going in there. I'm worried because Ohio State's going to have a good team, but I'm confident, more confident now in this program than I have been in a long time, that they can get it done in Columbus.
Maybe we'll do this on Friday. I just thought of a good idea. I'm going to write it down. I'm going to have us come up with our own spreads for all 12 games. And we're going to roll with that. We're going to roll that out on Friday. I don't want to do it right now because it's kind of on the spot. We might need to think about it just a little bit. I was going to ask you to do it right now, but that's okay. We'll move on from that. We'll think on that. That'll be a segment that we do on Friday where we can kind of see, you know, not only do we think Michigan's got a pretty easy schedule, but how easy? Like, you know, what are they looking like against the Penn State at home? Like, what would you set that line at right now? We'll do that on Friday. That'll be kind of fun. So we'll do that. All right, Chris, I'm going to kick it over to you and let you kind of run the next segment here. You came up with a list that you said you would like to throw at me and see if I agree, disagree, if you forgot anybody, a little fact checking.
I'll throw it to you. I'll throw it to the fans. I mean, I'm curious. I was going through. I'm excited about what Michigan has coming back. I mean, I know that they're losing a lot of weapons, but I think that Michigan's returning quite a bit. And, you know, I said today on social media, on the Winged Helmet, I think I put it out on Twitter, that, you know, for me, for my money, Blake Corum takes that number one spot as the most important Wolverine that's returning in 2022. I think his work ethic combined with his ability on the field, his leadership, the way that he takes care of business off the field, I think that you can never have enough of those guys in your locker room. And so for all of those reasons, I picked him as my top returning Wolverine in 2022. But what I did is I went through and picked the top 10 most important returning Wolverines in 2022, the top 10. Give me some music, some edit. What do we got? What do we got for a backtrack there?
We can do we can do our little,
let's get a backtrack going.
I think this will work, right?
Perfect. That's exactly what I needed. All right, sir. I'm going to start us off at number 10. We're going to count down all the way to number one. Obviously, there won't be any surprise at number one because we know who that is. But coming in at number 10 is the most important returning Wolverine in 2022. I've got Mike Morris, defensive end Mike Morris.
Mike Morris. Yeah.
Initial thoughts.
He's got to step up in a huge way. I mean, it'll be interesting where I see how the rest of your list shapes out. But I think if I was going to put together my same list of 10 guys in this category, I think he would be on there. I mean,
somewhere
when you,
on it.
when you lose a guy like Aiden Hutchinson and David Ojabo, you're going to need somebody to step up on that outside. He's more Aiden than he is Ojabo, but he's not really like either of them, in my opinion. He's a bigger body, certainly not as flexible, not as twitchy, not as explosive, but he's going to have to step up somewhere. Mike McDonald will have to find a way to use him better. Because I mean, look, dude, look at the jump that Ojabo took from last year to this year. If Mike Morris can do half of that, he'll be real serviceable. So you never know. But right now, I would say Mike Morris is not the kind of guy you turn loose and let him get after it like you did with Hutchinson and Ojabo on every play. But he's important because he's going to be replacing one of those two guys in some way, shape, or form.
And he is, and he got a lot of minutes on the field this
year. He played a lot this year. He did.
And I think that is one of the most important parts of this is that, and I said it when I think I put up a post on Instagram about Mike Morris, but Aiden Hutchinson and David Ojabo have laid out the blueprint for any defensive end or edge rusher at the University of Michigan that wants to be successful. Now, clearly, Aiden went into the offseason with a plan to become one of the most dominant players in college football, and it worked. So if Mike Morris follows that plan, I think he can be just as good as anybody out there, but his return is crucial. I'm going to stick on the defensive side of the ball at number nine. I've got a guy that I think is going to step up in a big way in 2022. I've got linebacker Junior Colson as my ninth most important returning Wolverine.
Youngster, but he played a lot, and he's going to play even more. That's a kid that's never going to come off the field in 2022. I mean, he's going to be out there on every play. He's got to get better in pass coverage. We saw him. He got torched a couple of times against Georgia. Now Georgia's Georgia. They just won the national title, and they got studs everywhere. But Junior Colson was put on a few posters against Georgia. He's going to have to be better than that. You know, part of that's probably being young. Part of that's Mike McDonald not quite being ready. I mean, there were quite a few times in that playoff game that I felt like Mike McDonald did not know that was coming. He did not know they were going to do that, and he didn't have his guys in the best spot all the time. Colson's going to be a true sophomore. He's going to play a ton, super athletic, big, rangy. Really important to what they want to do on defense. There's no doubt about it. I mean, again, it's going to be interesting to see where you've got all these guys when we get through all 10. I might come back and say, like, move this guy up, move this guy down.
Take this guy off.
Yeah, Colson's important, though, man. Really important to what they want to do on defense.
All right, man. At number eight, we're going to go over to the offensive side of the ball. I think this guy is primed to have a monster 2022 season. I've got Andrel Anthony at the number eight spot in the most important returning Michigan Wolverines. Too high, too low.
You're high on Anthony. You like him a lot.
Love Andrel Anthony.
You like the drip. You like the dreads out the back.
I like the drip. I like the dreads. I like the swag. Yeah. I really like the speed when he gets the ball in his hands. I like his ability to go on top and snatch the ball out of the air like a throwback to what we used to see out of guys like Braylon. Yeah, I love Andrel Anthony.
I'll see if you've got any other receivers on there and where at before I make my judgment on whether he's too high or too low, but I like a lot about what he can do. His chemistry with JJ also is important. We saw that. Andrel should have a big sophomore jump, man. I think there's no doubt about it. We'll see on this 1 through 10, but I like where your head's at.
All right, man. At number seven, and I didn't even do this on purpose, but at number seven, Donovan Edwards. Donovan Edwards at number seven. The dude he could play quarterback if Michigan needs him to do that. Apparently, I don't know that there's anything this kid can't do. He's going to obviously play a huge part in whatever Michigan tries to do offensively in 2022. I got him at number seven. Too high.
I want to throw this comment up real quick. CJ, is that a thing? You guys are living vicariously through the dreads.
Look at if life were different, I would the dreads. I would have the grill. That it would be done. But I just. You know, the cards weren't dealt in my favor, so.
Dude, if you were a white guy with dreads, you would be in a different arena.
But what I'm saying is I wouldn't be white either. I'm saying if it were doable, I would do it, but it ain't doable, so it's not going to be done.
The dreads on, I mean, like.
Just dripping everywhere.
Let me put it to you this way. If you're a white guy with a beard and dreads, you're not in the sports world.
Unless you're playing.
No, there's no white Birdman
Anderson. Didn't Birdman Anderson pull that look off? Didn't he do like cornrows with a beard?
I don't know if he had dreads though. I'm like, if you're a white dude with dreads and a beard, you're probably living in a box somewhere. I mean, you're not running a podcast.
Unintentional dreads? Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, selling weed in Ann Arbor or something. You're not on a sports podcast. No. Totally different kind of a kind of animal. Yeah, 100%. 100%. All right. Number six was who?
Oh, shit. I forgot. We're doing this list. All right. Number seven, we got Donovan Edwards. At number six, I think this guy's coming back.
I didn't give my comments on Edwards. I totally lost.
Yeah. Throw
the
it
dreads
out.
Just the threw dreads, me off.
The drip.
Completely. Edwards. Well, we saw Michigan this year utilize a two-back system about as well as you possibly could. So you lose Hassan Haskins. You replace him with a Donovan Edwards. Now you've got him and Corum as your 1-2 punch. Dude, inject all of that into my veins. Corum, Edwards, all day long. Stud. He's going to be a stud.
I will say, I do believe Mitch McGarry. I see somebody mentioned him in the comments. I believe Mitch McGarry did go dreads for a minute, possibly before he shaved his head. Maybe. I don't know.
Case in point.
Well, okay. That's not bolstering my case. Let's go to number six. Michigan actually lost a key portion here, so I think his return just got that much more important. Mozzie Smith in the middle. I think that guy took a big step forward in 2021. He was obviously a key contributor. And now that you're losing somebody like Chris Hinton and you're going to be thin up front, I think returning a guy with the experience of Mozzie Smith is huge for a Michigan defense that's going to be trying to replace a lot of talent.
I can get on board with that, and I'll say it this way. Of the guys that you've named so far, Mozzie Smith probably has a chance to come up shortest of what Michigan needs, if that makes like he's important because he's so important, is what I'm saying. Like, sure. You'd love for a Donovan Edwards to blow up and break out, but like, you've got Blake Corum, you know what you got in him. Same thing with Andrell Anthony, you've got three or four other receivers who have been pretty productive who can do some things. Mozzie Smith, like, if not him, who? Like, you gotta have him be productive. He's gotta be on the important list because I don't know what else you do it. I don't know what else you do there. I know Michigan looks like they're kicking the tires with some transfers. He's important, man. He's really important. And honestly, like, when I saw Chris Hinton go pro, I'm like, damn, is Mozzie thinking about going pro? I mean, they're like the same guy almost, you know? Yeah. It wasn't like Chris Hinton was head and shoulders better than Mozzie Smith as a player this year, I don't think. I mean, I can go back and look at it a little closer, but when I think like game to game, it wasn't like I was like, God, I wish Mozzie could play like Hinton. I don't think I ever said that. So, yeah, I agree. He's going to have to step up in a big way and be a big part of what Michigan does in the middle on defense. That whole defense, dude. Anybody who played any snaps on defense this past year is going to have to get a rocket up them and go to the next level because they're. I mean, McDonald needs that.
But there's so many question marks. I didn't know where to go with these guys. Like, I had Rod Moore on the list at one point. Rod Moore did not make the list, by the way. But let's move forward here to number five. Interesting spot for this guy at number five, but I have got current starting quarterback Cade McNamara at number five as the fifth most important returning Michigan Wolverine. And before I tell you why, I'll let you speak on that.
I don't think that's there because I'm fully in the JJ camp, and I don't even know if Cade McNamara is going to be on the roster come the fall. I mean, that's not crazy to say, is it?
No, not at all.
I understand where you're coming from because with all the leadership that this team lost, he was in that group of guys like Aiden Hutchinson and Josh Ross and Brad Hawkins and Hassan Haskins and Vistardis and Ronnie Bell, who was injured. I mean, Cade was their guy, and you heard all the players talk about him as being their guy. If JJ takes over the starting job, which I think he has to, what does that leave for Cade? Why would he stay? I don't know. That's a tough one. That's a tough one.
I think all the points you make, I agree. Here's why I put him at number five, because I still think there's a lot of development that JJ is going to have to go through here during this offseason. And I think having Cade McNamara in the locker room, in the weight room, on the practice field, I think that's going to pay dividends for JJ McCarthy when the season rolls around. And so from a leadership standpoint, from an example standpoint, my hope is that selfishly Cade remains with the team because I think he's good for the program and I think he's good for JJ's development. But that's why I put him at number five, because I think he's going to help that process along simply by being in the building.
That's an interesting one. That's the first one that really got like a strong reaction from me. Like I said, I mean, the other ones, like, you could be splitting hairs on their.
Well, the list can't be boring either. I gotta try to massage the teat a little bit.
Teat engine. making that into a drop ASAP. Massage the tea. Get it. All right, number four. We're coming up on our top three. We already know number one. What do we got?
All right, at number four, man, I absolutely love this guy. If I could, I would just put him in a cloning machine and take a whole team of them. But having this guy's back huge, Ronnie Bell.
People are throwing TFGs at you just for saying the word teat on the pod, dude.
I got Ronnie Bell at number four, the fourth most important returning Wolverine in 2020. He got off to a hot start, man, in that Western Michigan game. And it looked like it was going to be bag season for Ronnie Bell. And unfortunately, the injury happened. We know he missed out on just such a spectacular year. I think these guys are excited to welcome Ronnie Bell back. I think he's excited to be back on the field, whether it's production on the field or what he does for the locker room. To me, Ronnie Bell is a critical piece of what these guys are trying to do.
That's interesting. I'm wondering, I know JJ is going to be one of these next two. I know that. I'm not sure who you're going to have in the other one, because I immediately said in my head, when you said you had this top 10 list of most important Wolverines, I went in my head, maybe not in this order, but I said Corum, JJ, Ronnie. That was my three. And so I'm curious. I'm curious to see who you have in these next two spots. I know one's going to be JJ. I don't know if he's two or three for you. I'm curious who the third guy is. But I don't disagree with anything you said. Ronnie Bell is I think Jim Harbaugh has – they probably all said it, but I know everyone loves Ronnie Bell. Every person on this team loves Ronnie Bell, and he's their guy. That's why he was a captain. He was still doing captain things all season long, even though he was in street clothes, and he's really freaking good. I hope he gets back to his same, strength, wiggle, speed, all that stuff. It's tough for a receiver. Receivers and DBs, man, with ankle, with Achilles and ACLs, you always wonder a little bit. But hopefully he gets back to as close to 100% because he's really freaking good, and he is important in all those other areas as well.
All right, man. Well, this next one might put some question marks to bed here. So at number three, I got this guy high. I am very, very high on this guy. Clearly at number three, it's a guy that Josh Gattis once referred to as the most talented offensive player on the roster. At number three, I got him. Big man, Zach Zinner, coming back on the O-line. That dude, he's the type of offensive lineman that I love. The eye paint, the nastiness. We were down on the field watching him warm up. That guy is an absolute unit, and you can never have enough of those big nasties up front protecting, whether it's McNamara, whether it's J.J. McCarthy. I think he's going to anchor down that offensive line. You're obviously going to lose some leadership there with Vestardis. I've got Zach Zinner. I'm very, very high on this kid, man.
I don't disagree with how important – I don't know if I'd have him that high. He'd be on my list. I don't know if I'd have him at number three because here's part of my disclaimer. I still would really like to see who's staying and who's leaving from the O-line. If you talk about losing a Ryan Hayes and a Stuber and a Vestardis, Zinner moves up the list for me. But if you do get a couple of those guys back and you've got some continuity, you've got some leadership, you've got some older senior guys, then Zinter's importance just isn't quite as high for me. He's really good. I mean, you said it. Josh Gattis said he might be the best all-around player on the team. That sounds a little hyperbolic to me, but, I mean, he's really freaking good. He started playing as a true freshman. He'll now be a true junior, a third-year player coming into the season next year, and he's rock solid. I mean, if you put the tape on, he doesn't really mess up. He's mean. He's nasty. He's athletic. He's big, strong. He's everything you want as an interior lineman. He can also play center.
I'll tell dude something.
That's not what's going to happen. But he's versatile. He does it all, man.
Something changed for me the night of the college football playoff. Being down on the field and being that close to the offensive linemen as they were warming up, it completely just changed my perspective of that position and the guys that play that position and watching them go through their drills. I walked away so impressed with that group. And obviously the fact that you were watching the best offensive line in the country was something that, wasn't lost on me. So again, man, Zach Zinner, very high on that guy.
Yeah.
I think he's going to be a major piece of that offensive line, but I think you make a good point. We really haven't heard from those guys in terms of, who's going to be back. We know that Vestardis is gone, but haven't really heard from the other guys. So that will change that a little bit. Number two, we know who's there.
Yeah.
The kid, the gunslinger, JJ McCarthy at number two. I mean, the dude's the future. It's his time. We've seen enough, in my opinion, from 2021 to just know that he has abilities that Cade simply doesn't have. Now, year one, I think you could make the argument that there was too much of a risk-reward trade-off there and that you wanted to get his feet wet a little bit. I don't think you can make that case in 2022. He's going to have a full year of experience under his belt. He's clearly the more athletic quarterback on the roster. He can escape the pocket. He can create plays. His arm is on another level. J.J. McCarthy is going to take this program to whatever next level is available to him.
You're not going to get much of an argument from me because I would have J.J. McCarthy at number one. I think him as your starting quarterback, he's the most important piece on this roster. I think when you look at who wins national titles and who makes it to the playoff, they always have elite quarterbacks, except this year with Stetson Bennett. But they did have, like, you know, arguably the most talented roster in the country all around him. But every year before this, your national title winners and your playoff winners were Jalen Hurts and Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence and Kyler Murray. You go down the list, it's these guys who are elite at their position end up going in the top three or top five of the NFL draft. You've got to have elite talent at the quarterback position, I think, to play at the highest level.
Yeah.
I'd have him at number one.
The only reason he didn't go number one is because Cade McNamara is still on the list. And I know for a fact that Cade McNamara can at the very least get this team, you know, to Indy to win a Big Ten title and into the college football playoff. And so if Michigan needs a quarterback next year and JJ McCarthy's not there, they've got a quarterback for next year, but that is certainly not the future of the Michigan football program. Is like, as far as I'm concerned,
you know what? I see a lot of people saying there needs to be more love for the tight ends.
I don't agree with that.
I
didn't have tight ends on my returning weapons either. And I've been taking a lot of heat for no love for the tight ends. Look, it's nothing personal. It's just there are certain players who happen to play other positions that I feel are, more important.
Here's how I would say it. Eric All, Luke Schoonmaker, getting both of them back is huge for Michigan's offense, run game, pass game, both. But if either one of those two guys are like your top player on offense, you're in trouble. I mean, like, that's just being real about the position. That's tight end versus your running back who carries it 20 times a game or your quarterback who touches it on every play. Could you put one of them in the top 10? Maybe. I'm not going to pound the table for getting one of them in there. I think, and honestly, man, I know once upon a time Jim Harbaugh said that Eric All might be the best tight end to ever play at Michigan. Luke Schoonmaker, pretty damn good.
He made a couple of incredible catches down the stretch. Yeah,
and he's a beast now. He's up, north of 260. He's huge. I remember what Luke Schoonmaker looked like on his high school tape when Michigan took a commitment from him, and everybody was like, "Who the hell is this kid?" Nobody even knew who he was. He barely had a Rivals profile. His highlight was like grainy and old. You know, he's like playing quarterback and wide receiver, and everyone's like, "God, here's Don Brown's influence again, taking some slappy kid from Connecticut. What are they doing?" And now he looks like a brick shithouse, man. He looks like he's going to play tight end in the NFL. And yeah, Michigan's getting him back, and he's really good. And so is Eric All. So I don't disagree with people saying that maybe one of them should have been on the list. I don't think I would have Cade McNamara on my list, and I feel dirty and mean.
You dirty bastard. Look at you. Dude just beat Ohio State, won a Big Ten title, and you won't even put him on your damn list as far as like important returning Wolverines?
Cade McNamara?
He's a dog.
He is a dog, but I can't do it because I'm ready for the J.J. McCarthy era, and I think that's the magic bullet, man. That's what takes the offense to another level. And if he is really what I think he could be and is as good as advertised in the little bit that we've seen of him, I don't know how you put a backup quarterback on the list of top 10 most important players. That's kind of where my reasoning comes in. I'm going to throw you a wild card. Of somebody who I think needs to be on this list, needs to be really important for what Michigan wants to do. Olu Oluwatimi, the transfer center from Virginia to take over for Vistardis as a former Remington finalist, guy who's started 30-some games for Virginia. I think he is going to be massively important for that offensive line.
I, he's important if he lives up to the hype, I guess. If he comes through, that's where I can't put him on my list because he's such an unknown commodity. Like the guys on my list, those are known commodities. I know when they return what I'm going to get from those guys. Maybe with the exception of Junior Colson, you know, he's still a little bit young, but I feel like his upside is just so high.
I think Michigan landing Olu out of the transfer portal was huge.
Yeah.
I think it's, I mean, that's like landing the best center in the country in the recruiting process by a lot. I mean, you're talking about a 22-year-old kid, 315 pounds, has played 30 games, was a Remington finalist as one of the best centers in the country. And you slot him right in there for Vestardis,
yeah,
and you keep it moving. I think it's huge. And center is vitally important to the success. You're talking about Virginia. He's a very smart kid. He's going to pick it up and keep it moving. And I don't think they're going to miss a beat along the O-line if the rest of it remains intact. We were just talking about that on the phone the other day as you were putting – was it this list that you were putting together?
Different list, but it was about returning weapons, and it was specifically – or returning experience, you know, and who on that offensive line was coming back. And I think – you know, we're making a lot of assumptions there at this point.
I mean, dude, if you trot out an offensive line from left to right that goes Ryan Hayes, Trevor Keegan, Olu, Zinner, Stuber.
That's strong.
Run it back.
Championship offensive line.
You know, that's the unit that just won the best offensive lineman in the country award, where you swap out a guy like Olu for Andrew Vestardis. Yeah, I mean, like he's probably better. He's probably like a better draft prospect. He's probably got a higher upside. Now you've got chemistry and you've got 5 years built into what you're doing with Vestardis at Michigan. He was a captain. He, you know, beloved by his teammates. But in terms of like size, strength, ability, Olu is probably better. And so I think he could be huge. It's really going to depend on what the rest of those offensive linemen do. I'm really intrigued about that, actually. We haven't heard anything on Stuber, on Hayes. Even Keegan, like a little bit. I mean, I would expect him to come back. Like, I don't think that's much of a discussion. But the other two, you know, we'll see. We'll see what they decide to do. But I like your list.
I mean, were there any egregious omissions that I, you know, just people I left off that absolutely belong on there? Or is there some guys that are on there that you're saying this guy? Now, I know you got Cade McNamara as one of them.
Label, what is the title of this list exactly, how you worded it?
The top 10 most important returning Wolverines in 2022.
Yeah, I think...
Level of importance.
I think if you're talking level of importance, I think having Andrell on there over some of those other receivers is a you could talk about that. I mean, I know you're real high. I am too. I mean, I like the kid a lot. But you've got three or four other guys in Mike Sainer still, Cornelius Johnson, Roman Wilson, A.J. Henning, that like have been there longer, have played more, are going to play a huge role in the offense. I guess your thought is that you'd like Andrell to surpass some of those guys and maybe be a bigger weapon or a bigger target for whoever the quarterback is.
I think Andrell needs to be target number one for J.J. McCarthy. I think that combination is a deadly combination. I think Andrell can take the top off of a defense. I think he's quick, but he also has the height that those other guys you mentioned don't have. They fit more of that speed and space mold where Andrell can get vertical, and we saw him do it against Michigan State where he'll jump up in the air, snatch the ball out of the sky. Those are the guys that when you get a combination like that working, that's how you take your offense to the next level. And so I put him on there with J.J. McCarthy because to me, that's a package deal that's really going to push this thing into another stratosphere.
And you do have Ronnie on there at number four. I mean, so you've got another receiver on there. I mean, I think you know,
those weapons for a McCarthy or, you know, even a McNamara, if that's where things go. Those are two pretty good weapons to have out there. I still don't know what you're getting out of Cornelius Johnson.
Yeah.
You know, I keep expecting him to explode, and it's like, I don't know if it's more him or if it's more just a lack of Michigan's, you know, passing attack.
And then, like I said, Zinner's position on the list is going to be dictated by what the other guys do. I don't disagree with putting
him
on there.
I had to show O-line love somewhere, and I couldn't put them all on there.
You got to. You know? Yeah, I you know, like I said, if you're talking about an O-line that suddenly doesn't have Hayes, doesn't have Stuber, maybe Keegan, I mean, I would expect him to be back, then Zinner becomes very important. I mean, insanely important on that O-line. But yeah, I don't I don't disagree with any of the other numbers. I mean, you mentioned Rod Moore. You know, maybe an R.J. Moton's going to have to play a bigger role next year. I mean, we'll see what, you know, with Brad Hawkins gone, with Daxton Hill gone. Trying to think of who else. I mean, the corners, you don't really know yet because, like, you know, there's a good crop coming in. You got Will Johnson, Jamon Green, D.J. Turner, I think, obviously. Who's your starting corners? You're playing a game tomorrow. Who are you putting out there?
I mean, DJ Turner, you know, I can make a strong argument for why DJ Turner should be on there simply because there's so many unknowns there, and he is one of the few known commodities. Regardless of what you think about his abilities, he's been out there and he's got the experience.
Who are you starting opposite DJ Turner if you're playing a game tomorrow?
I'll take my chances with Will Johnson, get his feet wet.
Will the thrill, dude.
Put him out there on the island in the number two jersey and let him work. You know, let him take his lumps as freshman. Same thing I wanted to see with JJ. And come to find out, it turns out that obviously working with the luxury of hindsight, but had JJ played the entire year, I don't know that Michigan wins a Big Ten title, but I think you're very, very excited about what this offense looks like in 2022. Then you've got a full year of starting experience for a kid who's clearly – just a different type of level of athlete.
It's going to be interesting to see what I see the question right there from, who was that from? Brady. The secondary worries him. Any thoughts there? You know, off the top of your head, who would you have stepping up back there? I mean, again, it's January 12th, but I'm thinking you're starting secondaries, Will Johnson, DJ Turner, RJ Moton, Rod Moore, right? I mean, yeah. And then, of course, you talk about the nickel package, the guy that who's the new next Daxton Hill that's going to be out there running all over the place with slots and doing all the different things that he did. Is that Rod Moore? And then you try to find, you know, does Makari Page make a resurgence back into the lineup? He played more as a freshman than he did as a sophomore. So I don't know. I mean, I agree. There are some question marks back there when you lose a guy like Daxton Hill and a guy with a ton of experience like Brad Hawkins. And even Vincent Gray, whatever you think of Vincent Gray as, you know, in terms of his ability, he was back there. You knew he was going to be there. Whether you thought he was that talented or not, he was there. Now you don't even really know who you've got back there, and that is an interesting point. Yeah, look, here's the deal, man. Michigan's got a couple of guys in Zeke Berry and Keon Sabb that are going to come in, and they're going to make a push for some playing time out the door. Like, as soon as they step in there, they're going to push for playing time. So maybe it is a Will Johnson, DJ Turner, RJ Moton, Zeke Berry. And then you've got Rod Moore.
Like a Fab Five secondary? Almost. Yeah. Just throw a bunch of freshmen back there and let them work.
There's some talent. There's a lot of talent in that secondary group coming in. Will Johnson, probably the most noteworthy, obviously, as a true cover corner. But you've got a bunch of guys back there that are pretty versatile. Zeke Berry, Keon Sabb mentioned that. Damani Dent, super raw, but also very athletic. So Pollard, which one's the corner? Miles Pollard, long, rangy, fast corner. Probably not quite as ready as Will Johnson. But and then they got the other like nickel guy, the kid from Tennessee. What the heck's his name? It's escaping me, Chris. It's escaping me. The kid from Tennessee is listed as an act. I can see his face. I can see his. Somebody will throw it up there. Somebody will remember it.
I drifted off. What were we talking about? What class?
Right now, incoming true freshman, part of that five. Cody Jones. There you go. Thank you, Malachi. Cody Jones, the versatile athlete from Tennessee who could play multiple positions in the secondary. And he's kind of like your Rod Moore of this class. So you've got some options back there. Young guys, but talented. Man, that defense is going to look so different.
Lots to figure out.
And you've got Mike McDonald trying to figure it out on his own, you know, second year doing it. It's going to be interesting. Still got Michigan at 10-2 out of the gate. Is that what you say, 10-2, or you got them at 11-1, or shit, man, we're supposed to just say 12-0, right? Then that way we're not hating.
This might be the one time where you could actually say it and, like, not be a complete asshole about it. You know, like, I think it's possible. It's certainly – I'll have to go in and look at my crystal ball. I'll put it this way. The idea of Michigan making it through the 2022 schedule unscathed seems – not likely to me, but 11-1 during the regular season seems very likely. Well, with another trip to Indy, which
take a look at it. How many Power 5 teams went undefeated this year?
There you go.
None. So it doesn't happen very often. So you've got, and you know, every team's a one bummer of an injury away from really shaking things up. And you know,
I would put it this way. I would put significant money down on 10 wins. I think you can take 10 wins to the bank. You look at that right schedule. Now.
Their over under is probably already out there.
Let's do it. As soon as we hop off, let's log on and let's start placing bets. Now is the time.
Let me see if I can pull up anything. I'm actually curious about that now. Actually, college football might not be a thing. Let me see. All sports.
We did get to an hour and 10 minutes.
Really, yeah, quick.
Unreal.
Team futures. Championship winner for 2022. Michigan with the 7th highest odds in the country. All right, I'm going to stop the music real quick. I don't care if we're at an hour and 10 minutes. I'll go 2 hours tonight, dude. I don't care. Care, dude. Chris.
That's a great question.
Oh, I didn't even do it one.
You missed
Chris, where do you think Michigan comes in at the odds?
Oh, that's a great question.
Andrew Luck getting it done.
Can I just say, people were busting his balls on social media. I loved his look. I love that he was jovial. I love that he seems Stash. To be extremely happy with where he is in life, man. That dude, to me, is a success story because he didn't let what should have been or what people thought should have been his path define him. He just kind of did his own thing, man. And it was so cool to see him. But yeah, the mustache, the get up, I was like, how is this?
Oh, that's a great question.
All right, Chris, here is my great question.
Let's hear it.
Name the 6 teams that have better odds to win the national title than Michigan next year. There are 6 of them. Go.
Alabama.
Yes.
Georgia.
Yes.
Ohio State.
Yes.
I can't. There's 3 more teams ahead of them?
3 more teams ahead of them and 1 team with the same odds as Michigan. So basically 8 teams in that top tier or whatever tier you want to call it. But yeah.
I mean, it can't be Cincinnati.
Nope.
Notre Dame.
Nope.
Texas. I have no idea.
You got Bama. Got Georgia. Got
Ohio State.
Clemson.
Clemson?
Yep.
Okay.
Oklahoma.
Okay, that I can see.
Texas A&M.
Okay.
With that class that they bought. Then Michigan.
USC?
USC is also right. USC has the same odds as
Lincoln Riley effect.
Plus 3,000. So Alabama has the best odds at plus 225.
I am shocked by Clemson. What did Clemson finish at in this year?
They lost like 4 or 5 games, but it's still the ACC. They're still loaded with talent. They're still, I mean, I don't know. I get it. I wouldn't, well, they have plus 1,200 odds. So that you get some value right there. If you put $10 on them, you're going to win.
$120.
Is that right? $130. Yeah,
I'll put some money on the Wolverines. I like those odds.
If you pick Michigan to win the national title and you put $10 on it, you'll win $310.
There you go. It's a $10 bet.
Yeah.
A $10 bet.
Dude, I almost won $1,600 on those NFL picks I did. I'm so pissed at Cleveland.
Everybody out there, stop what you're doing right now. Go put $10 on the Wolverines.
Do it. Hey. If you really want to get ballsy, put $10 on Wyoming. if you put $10,
put $10 in an envelope and mail it. I'll give you my address.
Yep,
send it to me because I will put that money to better use than it going towards anything to do with Wyoming.
If you put $10 on Wyoming to win the national title and they do it, you'll win 10 grand. That's not nearly enough. That should be like 10 million.
Yeah, I would say so.
That's pretty funny. I think that's all there is right now is national title winners. That's it. So all right. Let's get back to our closeout music and get the hell out of here.
Yeah.
At some point,
before we get too far away from it, we've got to sort of reflect on our trip that was Miami because we haven't really discussed it. We haven't really talked about it. We haven't shared any stories with the viewers.
Okay.
You know, we should revisit a little bit of our time in Miami. Not now, but soon.
Okay, I can do that. I've got a star for what we're going to do on Friday.
There was some dancing. There was some thrusting. There was some clapping. And I'm not talking hand clapping. I'm talking cheeks.
Some asses were thrown.
We've got things to discuss about my
got visual evidence of asses being thrown.
Yes, and yeah, Louis, the tattoo did happen. I did. I streamed it live. Streamed it live, Louis. Where the hell were you?
Come on, Louis. Come on, sweet Lou.
Unreal.
I got a very easy picture of it right here, Chris, for everybody.
There's your boy. Holler. Branded for life.
There's Chris's tat right there. Destiny is calling me, the winged helmet logo. Guy did an outstanding job, by the way. You were pumped about how good that guy did.
Phenomenal. Could not speak a lick of English. Phenomenal.
No,
phenomenal tattoo artist. Would go back to him in a heartbeat.
Rock hard tattoos. Right?
Rock hard tattoos, Hollywood, Florida, I believe.
Yeah.
Right, near the Seminole Hard Rock. Phenomenal place. They'll take care
of it. Hail Wine. Yeah, we got a lot of things we can talk about. Let's put a bow on the week. Oh boy. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us. We will be back on Friday because I've already got some things planned that we need to talk about. And I don't know, Chris, will there be a Jim Harbaugh decision by the time we do our next show? I don't think so.
Nah, we'll be waiting into next week.
All right, everybody. We'll see you on Friday. Take care.